Welcome to Singing and Other Sins, a production of Hawaii Public Radio, funded by the Bauer Foundation and supporters like you. Many thanks, member supporters. I'm Blair Boonmugura, your host for this afternoon. On this edition of Singing and Other Sins, we continue our interview with special guest, pianist Mark Markham. If you haven't checked out the first part of the interview, be sure to go online to the archives of Singing and Other Sins on Hawaii Public Radio and download the show there. Markham is a solo pianist, a collaborator with great singers, chamber musician, jazz pianist, and a vocal coach in great demand. While visiting Hawaii for a performance for the Alliance Française of Hawaii, he spent time with me, and we chatted during the first part of our interview about his 20-year collaboration with American soprano Jesse Norman. So during the second half of our interview, I directed the conversation towards some of the other great artists with whom Markham collaborated.
I think the most interesting thing for me is that the people that I got to work with were somewhat, not specialized, but very special in their relationship with the music that they sang. Like, I mean, Jesse is special because she's Jesse. That's already one thing. I spent 15 years collaborating with Phyllis Brynjolfsson, who was considered by Pierre Boulez and all these other great contemporary composers, is a real exponent, shall we say, of the person of the voice who could do this type of repertoire. And she came to teach at the Peabody Conservatory in the early 80s. And I was 24, 23 years old, and she asked me to play concerts with her because she knew that I could do it, and I did. And that's how I met Graham Johnson, who came to my dressing room, and then I wanted to know, who are you? And I said, they didn't give you a program. And that was another thing. These things happen to me at intermission, it seems like. People want to know, what's going on? Who are you? With Phyllis Brynjolfsson, I did my very first recording, my debut in 1994, 25 years ago, of songs of the Poème pour Me by Messiaen. There's also on the recording a piece by Charles Warnon, a very, very famous New York composer, A Winter's Tale, on a big poem of Dylan Thomas, 25 minutes straight, nonstop. One of the most challenging things I ever had to work on in my entire life. So, but I think today we'll listen to a piece of the Messiaen.
Dalla terra tu ne le ritroverai più, ne tire pa, ne frasse pa, ne discere pa.
Oh,
You're listening to Singing in Other Sins, and you just heard a performance by soprano Philip Brynjolfsson and pianist Mark Markham performing Épouvante by Messiaen from his Poème pour Mi. Markham continued the discussion by highlighting two singers with whom he's currently working who are both at spectacular moments in their careers, mezzo-soprano Janae Bridges and Lea Crochetto. Markham performed at Carnegie Hall with both singers this past season.
Lea Crochetto, that she's a very special operatic voice, but with a background in popular music, where she can do things that nobody else can do. It's overwhelming sometimes, the clarity from her being of what she wants to say, but she also comes with a Rolls Royce of a voice. And that combination is a very rare creature. And Janae Bridges, the personality, the voice, the intelligence, the curiosity, the physical presence in a room, that someone walks into a room and they don't even have to sing. And everyone knows, ooh, that is something. And they're curious and they want to know who it is. Then when they open their mouths, you're slayed. There's no other way around it. With Lea recently, Lea made her Carnegie Hall debut. And the month before that, WQXR in New York City asked us to come in to have a chat and to sing a little bit. We did a Rachmaninoff song, and then they asked us, oh, you sing from the American Songbook, what could you do? And we normally use Can't Help Loving That Man of Mine as an encore, which we improvise. There's no music, there's nothing, we both know the song. You get up and you do what you need, what you feel like doing in that moment. To be in a recording studio and doing that was probably one of the strangest experiences, because there's no ambiance of a hall. You know, it's all, and you have people moving buttons or getting ready to talk to you or someone over there, and there are little cameras here and there, and they're filming it as well as recording it and trying to find your freedom in that setting, which we found and pretty much blew everyone away, and they're wanting to know afterwards, where did you people come from? So, well, this is the world you live in, and with song, you have that possibility to live in that very, 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 very moment with no constriction whatsoever based on a conductor, a lighting designer, a costume designer. And this is what song is about. And that you have to be able to go there so, so quickly and to have that experience. Janae, she also debuted at Carnegie a month after Lea in December.
We were unable to obtain a recording from the Carnegie concert that Mark presented with Janae Bridges. So for now, included here is the performance that Mark Markham referred to with soprano Lea Crochetto, Can't Help Loving That Man of Mine.
Love one
Markham went on to discuss his association with famed countertenor Derek Lee Reagan, who achieved international fame after his voice was electronically blended with that of a soprano to recreate the castrato voice in the film Farinelli in 1994.
Derek was probably one of the very first countertenors to achieve international fame, and that Salzburg was doing Orfeo for him. I mean, these are amazing things when you start to think, you back it up. And these are the people with whom I got to work. And so when Jesse came along, it was like I had been doing it was almost like boutique singing, boutique careers, that they were so special in what they could do. It wasn't just someone who did everything or did, I don't want to use non-special, but it just did. These people had these very special gifts. And I got to be with that. And that for me is a lot of fun, because the job is to adapt to that person and find out what turns on all their lights. Mm-hmm. What can I do over there that sets it all off to where they feel completely free to be everything that they are? And that's a lot. It's not just playing with somebody. It's going well beyond that. And yeah, you get some characters. And that's part of the territory. It just comes with it. Can you deal with a character? Derek Reagan, we worked together a long time ago, but we never got to do a recording together. And it was before YouTube and all these things that went on back in the 90s. And he made recordings with Moses Hogan, who was an incredible arranger of this stuff and had one of the most incredible choirs to sing all of this music. And Derek did several recordings with them. But Every Time I Feel the Spirit is just a cappella with the choir, no instruments. And Derek and I always ended all of our recitals with that, with me playing. I did a reduction of the choir part. But it's infectious. It's an arrangement that no one's ever come close to, I don't think. I love the original, but this really is very, very special.
My lord spoke, and his mouth came fire and smoke. Down in the valley, on my knees, as my lord in mercy please. Every time my voice hears it, moving in my heart, I'll say. Every time my voice hears it, moving in my heart, I'll say. Jordan River, chill and cold, chill the body, but not the soul. All around me looks so fine, as my Lord is always mine. Every time I fall asleep, moving in my heart, I'll say. Every time I fall asleep, moving in my heart, I'll say. Ain't but one train run this track, it runs to heaven and runs right back. St. Peter waiting at the gate said, come on, sinner, don't be late. Every time I fall asleep, moving in my heart, I'll say. Every time I fall asleep, moving in my heart, I'll say. Every time I fall asleep, moving in my heart, I'll say.
You're listening to Singing in Other Sins, and today's program is the second half of a two-part interview with master pianist Mark Markham. In addition to discussing some of the great singers with whom he collaborates today and in recent years, like mezzo-soprano Janae Bridges, sopranos Leah Crescetto and Phyllis Brynjulfsson, and countertenor Derek Lee Reagan, we also talked about another luminary on the operatic and concert stage, soprano Leontine Price.
I see a wonderful photo of you and Leontine that's prominently shown in your home. And so what was that like, meeting Leontine Price?
Pretty much overwhelming that I heard of her growing up in Pensacola, Florida, heard about her from a voice teacher and heard an album and pretty much lost my mind. And the choir went on tour, and I went to a record store and bought everything I could find. And the following year, I was transferring to Florida State University. And before I left that summer, I found out that she was going to sing a recital in the fall. And I told everyone in Pensacola, I will be the page turner. And they looked at me like, you know, we know you get things done, but this is me. I think you're going just a little too far this time. No, no, I'm going to turn pages for Leontine Price's recital. And they all laughed. I said, well, you have a lovely time. And I drove off to school. It was only 3 hours away down the road. And I get to school, and one of my first priorities was, where is the office that deals with this? And I found out who it was, and I went to the office and presented myself. And the woman looks at me and says, oh, we have a fraternity boy who will be doing that, sir. Thank you for asking, but it's already taken care of. And I said, well, I'm going to leave you my name and number, okay? And I did, and about a week later, they called me back and said, our fraternity boy is not going to be working out well. We think we'd like to have you do this. And I said, how nice. That's wonderful. So I showed up, and there she was with her brother. And turns out she had had bronchitis and was barely over the bronchitis. There were a couple incidents, moments in the program where you could actually hear it, but she went through like a trooper. It was unbelievable. And we met then, and she was very, very sweet. And then we would cross paths in New York City, going to different concerts and things. And then I was teaching at Morgan State University in Baltimore, and she did one of her very first master classes. And I was on the faculty there, and I played the master class. And there we sat on the same stage together, and she would look, I'd finish something or play an interlude or whatever, and she'd look and said, sweetheart, you need to listen to him because he knows what's going on. And she understood. You know, I was just on my way. You know, at that point, I was 30 years old or whatever. And she sensed that there was something going on. And that was great. I mean, it's a wonderful affirmation, but also from someone who had a great spirit and didn't do this as some crazy job, or it didn't make her crazy because she did her work and she knew what needed to be done and she did it. And she made no excuses for it. And she talks about it all the time. And you read articles and interviews that I'm not out at parties every night. That's going to interfere with what I have to do. And the whole point of this is to have joy on the stage. And if you're not joyful up there, don't expect you're going to fool your public. And I live by that constantly. And people, oh, you really should do this more. You should go out. You should. No, uh-uh. I'm going to make sure that I'm on top of my game 1,000%. So when I'm out there, because things happen that make this job so complicated sometimes. And if you're not prepared within an inch of your life, you won't survive those moments. So the point is, be prepared. Do everything you can. And with Leontine, when you look back on her history, even from the very beginning, that first Lieder album that she sang of German and French song. That was her first album. She didn't debut with opera, and she was known for opera. Here's a Black American singing art song. There are no mistakes. You don't have to correct language. It's all there. It's crystal clear. And you're going, that's a little girl from Laurel, Mississippi, a Black girl, and she's singing. She did her work. And then Jesse came along and did the same thing, and there are many others too that. And I tried to explain to the young ones, and I said, you know what, imagine had they made one mistake, they could have been dismissed because of the color of their skin. That's how dedicated you have to be to this. But yet again, we go back, you have sometimes 2 minutes to say what you need to say in a song. You have 20 songs going on all night long. You have so many different things you have to get into. You cannot be approximate. You've got to dig as deeply as you can. Find 100 ways to say it, and then on stage you'll find 101.
Any favorite art song performances by Leontine that come to mind?
I heard her, Turning Pages. I turned pages again in Baltimore when she came there. We had dinner together afterwards. I mean, I remember I heard her in Philadelphia one night. Friends of mine in Philly, I had just moved to Baltimore, and they said, get on the train, Leontine's singing, we're going. I said, all right. I arrived. It is in a basketball. It's in a, what do you call those? A basketball court. Gymnasium. at a school that had been set up for a concert. And here we are sitting up in the bleachers someplace. And she was, I mean, at the end of the program, she always sang a lot of American songs, and she sang Ferry Me Across the Water of Ned Roram. The last note, that G sharp, I can still hear it. I can still feel it. It lasted for probably 20 to 25 seconds and just went on and on and on. The piano has died, and the postlude is very long for the piano. And she just spun the note, and you're there thinking, this is not humanly possible. I've heard her sing Befreit live. And while Leontine has her personality and she has certain things, that she, Leontinisms, so to speak, she would get into a song like Befreit, and it would be overwhelming as to how potent it could be, and that she would just deliver it straight on and get to the end of that song, and there's another one of these sustained notes. And while her voice was not necessarily large, it wasn't a huge voice, it was just a very concentrated instrument of color and sound, and she sang on her breath. She wasn't using that throat, which a lot of people love to do and think that's part of being art song. I said, no, it doesn't get into the room and the people are in the room. She always put it in the room with us. Whether you agreed with every interpretation she had, that's beside the point. That someone was willing to share something and put it out in front of, right there in your lap, that's extraordinary.
And here for you now, soprano Leontine Price performing Strauss's Befreit with Garvey accompanying, followed by Puccini's Il bel sogno di Doretta from his opera La Rondine.
Oh,
Thanks for listening to Singing in Other Sins. Today you're listening to the second part of my interview with prominent pianist Mark Markham. At this point of the conversation, I asked Markham about other genre of music that inspired him.
So Mark, on any given day, what do you listen to outside of the realm of art song, solo piano? What's something that might inspire you musically in another genre?
My first smart mouth response will be nothing, silence. But then in the silence, then you start hearing what you really want to hear. And the story and the music of Nina Simone is something that has moved me profoundly from the first time I ever heard this woman's voice and the way she touched a piano and the artistry of it all, that how she figured out how to put it all together as part of survival, pretty much. That she wanted to audition in piano at the Curtis Institute and sat there all day waiting for her audition. And then when it was her time, she asked, and they said, "We don't know. We don't have people of color, sweetheart, sorry." And that was it. And so she ends up at Atlantic City or someplace out there and goes to play the piano. And the guy says, "If you can't sing, you don't have a job." And that's why she started to sing. Talk about digging deep when you're really... talking about down and out. That was it. Your dreams have been crushed because of some stupidity and ignorance, pretty much, that existed and still exists to some extent in this country, that people are judged by the color of their skin. She inspires me with some of these songs, and she takes very simple things and her improvisations in the middle where you think there's a Bach fugue going on, or at least a two- or three-part invention. A few years ago, I think 2010, Jesse and I, with the band, opened the Jazz Festival of Montreux. And it was a one-hour straight set. And, of course, no singer wants to sing for an hour straight. The band has got to have a little something here and there to break it up somewhat for the singer, but also for the public, too. And Jesse was going to sing My Baby Just Cares For Me. And we went to work on that. And she said, well, I've got to have some space here before we start it. And so I decided, I said, okay, I'll do a tribute to Nina Simone beforehand. And so I started improvising on the song in the style of Bach and worked through the Bach and got that developed and then took it to Rachmaninoff the way Nina does. And I toyed with it in my head and tried to get, just have an idea of what I wanted, and got to that place that night in front of the public and thought, look at this, the little boy who trained to be a classical pianist is sitting at the Jazz Festival of Montreux opening the night. You know, it was almost too much to believe, and that moment came and I just gave it to Nina and said, okay, here we go, come on, get me through, guide me through this thing, show me what you would do. If you can do it, then God knows I should be able to do it, considering what simple difficulties I've had in my life. Hers were amazing and she pulled it off. And that's what I did. The place went absolutely ballistic at the, I mean, screaming and carrying on. I thought, what in the world? I can still feel it. It was so amazing. And to be able to do that for her, in honor of her. And so listening to her, sometimes it's an up, it can knock you down to the ground when you listen carefully. And one of the songs I really love, Cotton Eyed Joe. And you listen to that and you hear this improvisation that she does and it's kind of sparkly. And then the church comes into it. And then when you start listening to the words, you hear the profound sadness and the disappointment and how life doesn't always work out the way you want it to work. But what do you make lemonade with these lemons? And she was the greatest at that. And then that's when I go back to Leontine and to Marian Anderson and to Nina and all these people. When you think of what their lives were and they still got up and made music, it's like, Mark, be quiet. Go and do what you need to do.
Cotton-Eyed Joe. Well, I come for to see you and I come for to sing. And I come for to show you my diamond ring. I come for to show you my diamond ring. But hadn't it been for old Cotton-Eyed Joe, I'd have been married a long time. Tell me, where do you come from, Joe, 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 Joe? And where do you go? My Cotton-Eyed Joe. And now Where'd you come from, my cotton eye Joe? If you hadn't been so slow, don't you know I'd have been married a long time ago. Tell me, where did you come from? Where do you go? Cotton eyed
In addition to Nina Simone, Markham finds inspiration in another well-known voice, that of Barbra Streisand. Included for today's program is Streisand in a live performance of Bewitched, Bothered and Bewildered.
Beguiled again. Simpering, whimpering child again. Bewitched, bothered, and bewildered. Am I would not sleep till love came and told me I should not sleep. Bothered and bewildered am I. Cold, I agree. He can laugh, and I love it. Although the love's on me, I see too. Spring to him and long for the day when I'll cling to him. I am bewitched, bothered, so bewildered.
Singing in Other Sins, that's the program you're listening to, and our guest today is Mark Markham, pianist. During part two of this two-part interview, Markham and I discussed the decline of art song and the song recital, as well as early aspects of his musical career and some of the important factors that contribute to making it today as a pianist and vocal coach.
Well, I think number one right now in 2019, we'll just call it attention span. That's an issue that people, you know, things need to change quickly, they're disposable. But art song recitals should be very good for that because you get to think for, you concentrate for 2 minutes, we can move on to the next subject. But the game is the people who deliver it. You know, if you're delivering it because it's something to do, it's not going to work. If you don't choose a program that engages, that tells a story overall, building of programs to me is one of the most important things you could ever do. And I work with a lot of the singers I work with on that. We talk about it constantly and saying, what is it that you have to say You're the one there having to deliver this stuff. When I first started public speaking, probably about 30 years ago, the Johns Hopkins University asked me to be a lecturer for their alumni series, to travel around the United States talking. And I said, about what? How about the history of rock and roll? And I was like, and I went home that night and thought, the history of rock and roll? I don't even know where to start. I don't even have a connection to it. And someone gave me some great advice, and it's probably something everyone's heard this 1,000 times. Choose a topic that you feel passionately about, and then you can get up there and do your thing. And it's the same thing with playing music. If you're going to play music that you don't care about, don't think you're going to fool anybody, and be able to convince anyone, to bring to take someone to another world. And that's the whole part of the whole point of this. So with the song recital, the people just got up and kept singing the same 4 songs and whatever, and the same group of Debussy songs and the same group of Schubert songs. It was, you know, and you have to have a personality too to do this. You're the host, the hostess for the evening. There are dinner parties you go to where there's a hostess and you remember that person for the rest of your life, and there are others, who was hosting this thing? Because there's no personality. And it doesn't mean an ego trip that overrides or transcends music. It's just a desire and a joy of being there on that stage. And if the joy is not there, what is the point? But these are the things that determine if you're going to work with anybody else. And especially with singers, because things do change, because the instrument is constantly, the person, the instrument, all these things change, and there are all these variables to deal with. If you're going to panic in that moment and think about yourself, you're not going to get it done. If you think about the music and that someone else is going to be facing the public, I'm sitting there on the stage, I'm at this angle. But if I have to speak directly to them via singing, and I suggest to lots of pianists, if you've never stood up in front of that piano and had to sing, please do not tell me what bothers you about a singer. Get up and try it. See what it feels like. I studied. I know. I did it at the conservatory and had to stand up. And I sang Botschaft, and I sang Chanson Triste of Duparc. I had to stand up in that master class, that rep class that afternoon, and sing. And my whole body, I thought I was going to explode by the end of it. I thought, what in the world have you done to yourself? So, but, you know, you have to know what it feels like. And I had known since I was a child. Singing was first. You know, I happen to have hands and good hand-eye coordination and a touch for an instrument that I can express these feelings. But my feelings are based in the sounds and colors of words. Even in solo stuff, that's the part that they play off each other. One contributes to the other, and that I hear words, and sometimes even my dear teacher, Anne Shines, I would be playing Schumann, and she would say, what are the words here? And she'd leave that with me, and I'd say, okay. And I would put words to it, and the whole sound would change. And there we go. Well, the first music that I was involved in was singing when I was 4 years old. I was already in a choir. I didn't know what I had inside of me. But other people started to pick it up. And by the time I was 5, I'm singing solos in front of everybody. It wasn't ever made to be, now this is going to be difficult. It was, here, do you want to do this? Sure. So for me, it was more of just me getting to be me. And so I sang. By the time I was 9, I was singing on television every week. So when you have that, the piano lessons started at 8. A little keyboard was involved from the time I was 4. So singing and playing the piano they're inseparable. If you don't sing while you're playing the piano, then you're not playing the piano. And you flip it the other direction, that while you're singing, if you don't have a great sense of rhythm and musicality and phrasing and all that stuff, then you're not going to be a great singer. It takes all of that together. So when I actually got to the point where the piano teacher I studied with in high school, Robert Sherwood, his wife, Trudy Sherwood, she was a voice teacher. And she heard me play, and she asked me for my freshman year of college, would you like to play for some voice lessons? And I said, sure. And I sat there, and I remember playing, and someone is singing something, and I thought, I've never heard this song or never heard this aria, but it feels like that I've known it all my life.
As my time with Morecambe came to an end, I decided to bring the conversation to a program for singers that Morecambe began in Sicily.
I've looked for probably 20 years for a place in the summertime where I could invite young singers. You know, people not necessarily in undergraduate, but have finished that and moving, and they're looking, they really are serious about doing this as a career, as a job. And it was very tricky to find a place where you could, I mean, either there'd be a beautiful place and it was spectacular view and easy to get to, and but then, I don't have a place to house people, or a place you could house but no place to really work, and then not the support. And I finally went to Sicily a few years ago, and some very dear friends, they inherited half a village, a 12th century village from their father, and I was staying in the main house with them, and it's quite large. And I said, well, I have a singer in Munich, and she needs to work while during this time, this only time she has. Can she come down and I work with her here? She said, sure. Well, you can work down in the Casa del Maestro. That's the house in the garden. Oh, it's, and I thought, what do you mean in the garden? 3,000 square foot house in the garden in the village. So the main house was over twice that size. So I rented a little, you know, keyboard. Very nice keyboard that came up from the little village down below on the sea. They brought it up. Singer came. We had the most amazing time. I mean, it can't be bad when you look out the window and there's the Mediterranean over your shoulder. And I finished that session of the week with her, and she left. And my friend said, so what was it like teaching here? I said, it really was great. I said, well, you should do more. I said, well, I've always wanted to do something, but I have to house people. Oh, well, we can go look at that house tomorrow. So we get up the next morning and we go walk 2 minutes from the main house in the village. And here's this 17th century palace that they own that has been converted into three different apartments with kitchens and bathrooms and everything. I can house up to 14 people. And I said, well, this is it. So then I called my brother in the States who deals with all this type of stuff and said, what do I need to do? I need to raise money. It needs to be nonprofit. I want to invite, you know, I need to see how many people I can actually invite to where I can deal with it. And so 3 years ago, I invited four singers and had the most amazing experience working with people every day. And the whole point of this was I was seeing how people were just being run ragged and not giving a chance to work on things and to understand what gives them confidence on the stage. It's because you know what you know, you're connected. You know your connection. You know why you sing. And that was a big point of the whole project, asking people, why do you sing? And to seeing these looks come over people's faces, why do I sing? And everyone loves to talk about how you sing or what do you sing or where do you sing, but why do you sing? It tended to be lost. And I was taking it back old school, as people love to say. And, you know, before, people, singers saw someone every day. And that's what this is. You have an hour session with me every day, and then every afternoon we have a two-hour class, and everyone has to get up and sing, and you work in front of people. And by the end of the session, or the end of the 10 days, you give a concert. I watched a village get transformed last year. People showing up rather reticent as to, what is this? Sitting away from the rest of the public, pulling their chair, which was an outdoor terrace overlooking the Mediterranean. And these two old ladies decided they really didn't want to be that much part of it. By the third song, they had moved their chairs up into the group with everybody else. And by the end, the place was hysterical, up with joy, so happy and so moved by music, and that young people were willing to share that with them. And so for me, it's a given. I had to learn a new craft of raising money and talking to people about it. And to do what? Do you want to work? What? Work with singers. And I said, yeah, four people I will choose from around the world via my own encounters or recommendations of somebody else. And I try to find people who sometimes might not. They're all different. And it's not just one list of things that you have to all have or be the same. I don't need the star from a conservatory. And there might be some people whose opportunities, they might not have an opportunity if this didn't come along and open it. We got one singer going to the training program in La Scala this year. since last summer. That shifted it. He said it was amazing how it just turned just a little bit my view of how this happens and why we do it and how it works. And it gave him a freedom that he didn't have before. And it was already extraordinary what he was doing. This just gave that extra bit, because you've got to have that if you're going to survive this job and to keep wanting to be creative. That's the hard part.
I hope that you enjoyed the second part of this two-part interview with Mark Markham, a pianist with an international reputation. I invite you to tune in again next week for a future Singing Another Sins. So until then, I'll leave you with Markham's performance of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. I'm your host, Blair Boone Magura. Aloha. ¶¶